At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the podcast, Nicole and Ron. I appreciate you guys having me on. And like I was saying before we started, is when I got the email to have you guys on, I was like, okay, this is a unique dynamic. And so I'm excited to dive in. We always like to have on the podcast people who do all sorts of fun stuff, and with dogs, obviously. And so why don't you guys, instead of me introducing you, why don't you guys introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
That's good. Nicole, you want to start?
Sure. So I'll tell you a little bit about how Ron and I are connected, and then I'll let him introduce himself. But we have been best friends since eighth grade. We both born and bred in New York City. We went from eighth grade all the way through high school together. I did all of our homework. I'm definitely the smarter one.
That's the truth.
There's no question there. He may look a little better on paper to some people, you know, it depends what you're into. I'm a veterinarian. I'm a veterinary oncologist. I have spent the greater part of my career at the Animal Medical Center in New York City. It's the largest nonprofit teaching hospital in the world. I run the Cancer Institute, which is medical, surgical, and radiation oncology. I teach, I see patients, I do translational research, and we just started this amazing new company, PAD, which we really want to talk about.
Awesome. When you say you teach, what kind of teachings do you do right now?
So I teach interns, residents, vet students, anywhere from just general veterinary medicine, but mostly veterinary oncology, which is my passion and my specialty. So mostly cancer is what I teach them about, cancer in dogs and cats. Sometimes we throw some other species in there, horses, exotics.
Awesome. Cool. Ron, you're up.
Very cool. Yeah. So I was CEO of Petco for 6 years. And, you know, while I was there, we did a few interesting things. One is we took our vet network from, you know, 3 or 4 to over 200, which is why when Dr. Liebman talking about launching PAD, I had a lot of passion for the veterinary space. The other thing is, you know, you're no bad dogs. When I was there, we got rid of shock collars, right? And we were the first major player in the world that made a statement that we're all about positive training. And, you know, the head trainer at Petco, Darius, is, you know, one of my favorite people, and I learned a lot from him. So I also got passionate about training, which is why this conversation was, you know, something that I was super interested in. And then since I left Petco, I'm chairman of a dog food company named Bill Jack. You know, I got involved in about 9 months ago, and Dr. Liebman called and said, we got to go do this idea. And I just love the idea. There is a gap in the market from a care standpoint, and I thought we could help close that gap.
Cool. Sounds like you got a good background in business, marketing, road mapping big companies into becoming bigger and more successful. And that's interesting. And so
prior to Petco, I was at PepsiCo, chief marketing officer at PepsiCo, and then president at HP. So yeah, a few big companies in my background.
Cool. That's awesome. So what's PAD, and how did you guys create PAD, and what is it going to do to benefit dog owners who are, you know, listening to this, watching this podcast and are interested in helping their dogs or cats?
Cole, your vision.
So, you know, for years, and especially during COVID, I recognized and was really saddened by this gap that exists between the veterinary clinic and home care. Standard of care in the human arena is like a visiting nurse service, if you will. So elderly, people with disabilities, people who have had surgical procedures. There's always help, home help that we can subscribe to, that we need, especially hospice care, end of life care, which is a big passion of mine, being a cancer specialist. And so I started to take care of some patients that who people who couldn't really leave the homes their homes during COVID, because they had underlying health issues and put them at very high risk. And so I started to take care of these animals at home, and just, to be a good person and make sure that these animals got the care that they needed. They were cancer patients, because that's what I mostly see. And I started to recognize that it was making a really large difference. And that's because these were subtleties. These were procedures or treatments that maybe people wouldn't have really come into the clinic for, like cleaning a tumor, flushing it out, making sure the animal was ambulating, moving around appropriately, really just sort of TLC along with some medical care. And one patient in particular who I really feel, other than my own dog, really helped spearhead this. She ended up living 3.5 years with a tumor of her upper jaw. And I realized what having home care, either once a week or a few times a week, really did for this patient. And, I get requests all the time for people who need help at home, even just medicating their pets, especially cats. I know we're talking about dogs. We love cats too. Taking care of them, it's very hard to be a mom, a dad, a pet parent, and be the nurse and the doctor at home. It's hard to hold all of those hats. And so, sort of the goal and our vision here is to help bridge that and let pet parents be pet parents and let PAD, home pet services, come in and do the rest for you, for the pet parents, and for the pets.
So it's kind of like the end of life care, or the hospice care, or even I think there's a franchise for humans called Guardian Angels or something like that, where it's so you're essentially helping dog owners do end of life care or senior care with all the things that dogs and cats may need differently towards the end of their life, because obviously, just like with people. As we mature and age, everything changes, right? Our bodies start to change. Is that what you're doing?
That's a big part of it, but it's not the only part. So lots of young dogs, tear their cruciate ligament, right? They're active, big Labradors, golden retrievers, running around, playing frisbee, swimming. They tear their cruciate ligament. Very common procedures called a TPLO. It's a big surgery, an expensive surgery. It's a lot. And so that pet goes home, and then there's this gap, right? Like, so now what? How do we do this? How do we know that this amount of limping is still normal? How do we know how much we can move it? How can someone help us sort of do the massage and the passive range of motion? Those are young dogs. And so we're there. We're there with post-op care. We're there for animals that have, God forbid, been hit by cars, have had some sort of trauma, that need, bandage changes, they need support, they need their wounds flushed. So we'll do anything from, a very scared dog who it's too complicated to take them to the vet or even the groomer to clip their nails. We'll go there and do that. So we have a broad range from very simple to very complicated.
That's up my wheelhouse there, because I have a dog. I mean, a lot of people who listen to this podcast are would I think I just had a dog who went through TPLO. She's at the time she was 8 years old. She's a Dutch Shepherd, extremely active. All the things you said, the swimming, the frisbee, the jumping, the all of the activities, and actually one of my friends who was my videographer at the time also went through TPLO surgery with her German Shepherd, and they both ended up getting infected to some degree, whether the wound site or whatever, and the veterinarians told us the percentage of coming back and getting the screws out, the percentage of coming back and getting a tube, or the percentage of coming back and having to get an infection or whatever, were very, very, very small. And it was interesting because we both went in two separate hospitals, two different doctors, two different surgeons did this surgery, and both of them happened. And we were like, I don't know how true the percentage of that is, you know, because they all said, oh, it was really small, you know, it's probably not going to happen, but if it does, here's what we do. And so we just went through that, and it was this, because she's still very active and she wants to be active, and we really didn't know what is when we could, like with humans, you go back into the doctor for a checkup, and we went for a couple checkups, but I think it was only one after the surgery, and we didn't really know where that gray area was, where, okay, she wants to play, she's active, she's no longer limping, can we play frisbee, can she be off leash, can she run? And it was this gray area, and I know a lot of dog owners specifically go through the TPLO surgery, especially the bigger English labs, the heavier dogs who are putting a lot of weight on those ligaments and tearing those things, the active dogs. And it's always this question of, like, when can they go back to being who they were, and what's the risk of re-tearing it, or and a lot of times, I'm sure you can relate to this too, because you've seen this, is when the other one goes, what, you know, is it the same process? What if they go at the same time? Because that's what I've had with a couple dogs, is they both went. One of them is doing scar tissue recovery on their own. The other one is torn completely. And it's a, like you said. So anyway, so that's so you're basically, so what's the difference between the, so is it basically in-home care with the spectrum of I'm going to come in and do rehab with your young dog who tore their had to have TPLO surgery and tore the cruciate versus like the, so you're doing a full spectrum vet care in home, is that right?
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, the thing way I would think about it is a registered nurse, right? Or in terms of you know, the nurse practitioner, in terms of how, because we're bringing vet techs into the home, so we're not doing diagnostic. We partner with veterinarians to take care of the pets. So it, whether it's the post-op surgery that Nicole mentioned, whether it's, you know, medical baths, whether it's diabetic pets, whether it's pilling cats, then the back end hospice type care. So anything that a vet tech can do, think about it as a nurse into the home to help take care of pets. One of the things that really hit me early days when we were planning the business was Nicole shared a note within the hospital of a pet that had a feeding tube, and the pet parent had to go away for 2 weeks. Mm. Well, the 13-year-old neighbor girl can't take care of that pet, right? That needs professional. Or think about a you know, an older person with a bigger pet, and that pet has to be stood up, you know, every couple hours. How are they going to do that? Or an older person trying to track down a cat, or, you know, so a lot of these, or even one of the things we're getting requests for is take my pet to the hospital. You know, the incidence of veterinary visits is actually lower than it should be. And we facilitate that for people who either don't have the time, or, you know, a lot of the elderly, you know, don't have the mobility to do those types of things.
Yeah, that's unique. That's really cool. I had a dog also that lived until she was about 18. And if I didn't do what I do for work, meaning work from home and be able to move my schedule around, it was tough. I mean, I extended her life because I was able to take care of her as a senior dog, because she had a hard time getting up, but when she got up, she would hobble around and she'd go pee, but sometimes her legs gave out, and so you'd have to lift her up, and
right.
A lot of that stuff was also like the conversation of when is it time? Like, you know, when is euthanasia on the table, when you can ask a professional to come over to kind of audit and really look at like the quality of life of the dog. Because as dog owners, no matter if you're a professional or not, like we sometimes have this false reality of what is real, right? Where it's like, this is, oh, she's fine, or she, her quality of life's good. And it's like, sometimes you need an outside perspective to come in and go, actually, she's, you know, and I've had a lot of clients and, you know, being a dog person my entire life before I was a professional, they tell you things you don't know, right? Where she's like, oh, she's actually, you know, extremely in pain right here. Or there's this mass that's actually cancerous that's now taking over the liver. And there's all these things that you just don't know as you're going through senior care. And I know senior care is so hard for pet owners because the average person by default has to go to work. Like they don't work from home. They don't have, and you could call it a luxury or whatever, but I mean, and it can be sometimes, and other people are like, no, I want to go. I want to go in. So, but it is very difficult for people who work a traditional 9-to-5 job that, or more, that have to take care of a senior pet because they need, like you said, medication. They need help getting up. Maybe they have to, or even as early on as, you know, urinating more frequently because they're getting older and drinking more.
Nicole deals with this all day long. I'll let her elaborate, but let me just give you a personal experience.
Yeah.
I lost my father and my dog Yummy at the exact, roughly the same time. Mm. We extended my father's life for as long as we possibly could with home hospice care for the final two and a half months of his life. I was lucky between myself and my fiance Jen that we were able to be home with Yummy. But what a conversation Nicole and I had is, for most people, they have to, out of necessity, truncate that pet's life and their time with the pet's life because there is no hospice care for pets. It does not exist, right? It just doesn't exist. And it's something that Nicole and I are passionate about. For those who want to and those who can, we want to help them have more time with their pets. And inversely, the pet have more time with the pet parent while they're still physically able to have a decent life. Too many pet lives get cut short because of physical limitations, but there's still a quality of life, but the pet parent who has to go to work can't facilitate that. And I'll let Nicole elaborate.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
I just see so many people that are conflicted and guilt-ridden, and they really just don't have a real answer to all their concerns. And I am a veterinarian, so I understand for lack of a better word, burden of what people need from me, right? Like I get maybe 400 emails a day, literally 400 emails a day. And a lot of those are from pet parents just needing to check in and needing help, or, you know, they have a simple question, or maybe it's a complicated question. Now, I'm very fortunate and privileged to have this amazing team that helps me with all of that, right? I have brilliant residents and interns, and I have people who support me and nurses that I work with that are able to help provide that information. But most veterinarians do not have that. You know, I work in an academic institution. Most veterinarians work in a regular general practice, and they don't have all of that support. And people need that support. I mean, we all know what it's like to try to get the surgeon on the phone. Surgeons are generally in surgery. You know, they can't pick up the phone to say, oh, you know, he seems okay, but he went down the stairs and shouldn't, and I know he wasn't supposed to. And do you think he's going to be okay? Like, this is real worry and reasonable worry and concern, and people need support. And so really the true nuts and bolts of this business is to bridge the veterinarian and the pet parent, right? So you're not calling the surgeon at 9:30 and understandably not hearing back from them until 6 o'clock at night, because they are busy, they're working, they can't stop and give people the time that they need. So PAD will come, a licensed vet tech. One of our techs ran an entire surgery department at a big referral practice out on Long Island. She's amazingly gifted. She'll go there. She'll evaluate the pet. She'll sit with the pet parent. She'll answer the questions. And then she'll also report back to the veterinarian always. And so then there's a dialogue amongst, the professionals, but also with the pet parent. And it's really the, it's an advocate, if you will. Like we always say this, the reason why many people don't get adequate health care, even for themselves, is that they don't have a great medical advocate, right? They don't have someone who can speak the language and advocate for them. And that's what the vision for PET is. It's to advocate for not only the pet, but also the pet parent and the veterinarian. So, for example, this wonderful woman who does a lot of rescue work, she rescues Boston Terriers. And this lovely dog was nearing the end of his life. He was in kidney failure. And she lives all the way across town from where her vet clinic is. And she called me, actually, and she said, How can Pat help? Like, he needs blood work. It's expensive for me to get him in an Uber and go all the way downtown. It's $50 there, $50 back. And then I have to wait. It's a very busy hospital. What can you guys do for me? And I said, well, how about I send someone there? They'll draw the blood. We have all the supplies. They'll drop the blood off at the vet clinic. The vet clinic will run the blood work, and then they can call you and you can discuss the results without Tony having, needing to be transported in a state where it's really very uncomfortable for him. And, you can just sit and relax and be with Tony right now because that's what you need and that's what he needs. And, our techs went right away. They drew the blood, in a fear-free environment, in a comfortable environment without a bunch of chaos. And, the veterinarian was able to run the samples and call the pet parent and say, you know what? There's not much more we can do here. Unfortunately, we're at the end of the line. And so for Tony's last day, he didn't need to travel cross town and go to a busy vet clinic where there was no additional help that he could have been afforded to him at that point. And then at that point, someone came and performed, humane euthanasia. But that pet parent, the foster, was so grateful to just have those last hours at home in a really peaceful, supportive environment.
It's huge. The term euthanasia is, I think it's Latin for like a peaceful death or a comfortable death or something like that. And I've gone through two euthanasias the last 3 years with my older dogs, obviously, and one of them was extremely stressful, and one of them was extremely not stressful. And so what you're talking really hits home with me immensely, because I had to go through both experiences, and it was unfortunate because there's this almost fight or flight feeling that you have as a dog owner to say, can I make this better? Is it possible to do this a different way? Do we have other options? And having a company like Pat, and for the people who are listening, a lot of people listen, and we talk to different PhDs and different dog trainers and Hollywood trainers and a bunch just but and we talked to business owners as well, and this kind of sounds, like we're promoting PAD, and of course organically we are, but it's really something that can be beneficial. My Saint Bernard ended up having he had laryngeal paralysis. When he passed away at 12, which is good. He's 150 pound. He's a big saint, and he had laryngeal paralysis, LARPAR, which we opted out of the surgery because it was very on, it was very environmental. So if he got super stressed, it would come on. It wasn't the traditional like clinical LARPAR where it would be there all the time, like hacking, and it was only when it was, you know, he was super stressed and worked up, and so we dealt with that. We got him home. A beautiful staff took great care of him, and then he ended up getting pneumonia, and then he ended up like having no appetite. And but structurally, he was, the hard thing was is structurally he was extremely healthy, like orthopedically, like his bones, his hips, like everything, the normal things that would take out a large breed dog, right, were intact. And so he ended up one night just kind of doing this stretch and this stretch and this stretch, and I was kind of looking at him and I'm like, something's not right. And you know, and having a large breed dog, you always worry about bloat because that's what everyone kind of scares you with, which is real. It's a real thing. Bigger dogs can get it, and they do get it. And so I brought him down to the vet, long story short, and she said, look, he's bloated. He just came off pneumonia. You know, I think we could do surgery, but we'd have to rush him down to the emergency vet and they'd have to do immediate surgery. The amount of stress that that's going to induce in him, and there's a 50-50 chance he could pass away during surgery. There's a good chance the surgery might not be successful. So there's a lot of things, and it was this enormous amount of stress. And this is your best friend. I mean, as you guys know, these are your best friends. These are the, and this was
they're wholly dependent on you.
100%. That's it. And that's what makes you go, well, and your brain just goes, you know, all over, and you're desperately trying to say, well, how can I? So then you're dealing with, you brought your dog in because they were acting funny. You bring them in, they're peeing and they're like, yeah, whatever. And they're just fine outside of, you know, a little something off. And then you're not bringing them home. And the dog gives you 12 years of happiness, joy, and you know there's a lot of love there, obviously. And so you're going through this process of, okay, not only is my dog passing away tonight without, you know, there's nothing I can do about that, but now they basically said, you know, you could come and say goodbye to him, and me and my wife, and this was post kids, so you know, if you guys have kids, I'm not sure, but your love for kids, you know, is when you have dogs, you're like, I couldn't love anything more. And then when you have kids, you're like, okay, I can love something a little.
The dog doesn't talk back to you.
Right. Yeah. And yes, that's true. And so we had to go down to the vet office, and they basically, because of his size, and he was, you know, they had him all drugged up, they said, this is the option for you. You should really euthanize the dog. Okay. So we made that decision. So we went to the front room, and they basically had like, they just ended up locking like their front door and having patients use the side door. And we had to basically euthanize them in the front office. And people were banging on the door, trying to get in. And we're saying goodbye to our dog of 12 years. And it's such a hard thing for everybody, because I'm like, his last moments are this. I'm stressed, he's probably stressed, although it was awful, really tough thing. And so my other dog Lola, who had outlived him miraculously 18 years, we had somebody come to the house and do it at the home, and it was surrounded by family, and it was peaceful, and there was this beautiful sun coming. It was beautiful, and I was like, okay. So to your point, guys, the in-home care, it's something I relate to. I looked at what PAD was, but I didn't get the feeling of the hospice care as much. I got the feeling of in-home services, but what you guys are doing from my own experiences is huge. And so where are you guys at now? Because I think one thing that I would ask, the next question, and dog owners I'm sure are thinking, like, because the price, right? Does insurance cover something like this? Do you have, like, how does this work with their pre-existing veterinarians? And what availability is it to, like, are you guys nationwide yet? So what's the available, because it sounds amazing, right? It really does. Where are you guys at with that?
So our plans are to be national. We launched in March in New York City, just to refine the model. It's also where Dr. Liebman practices, and so that's we're in the New York and Nassau County. We also do some a little bit work in New Jersey, so that's where we're refining the model. That's where we've launched so far. And our plans are to expand from there. And so far, it's going really well. We're growing about 15 to 20% month on month. So the demand is definitely there. And to your question on the vet, one of the things that Nicole has been adamant about, and since I manage, I think 240 hospitals, I understand as well, is we work hand in hand with the veterinarian. The veterinarian is the primary diagnoser and treater of the pet, in terms of whatever the ailment is. But then we do the follow-up. We do the ongoing treatment. We're the support mechanism for the pet parent. One of the things that Nicole talks about is pilling cats, right? I know this is about dogs, but cats lose trust if you do something that they don't want to do. So then your relationship with your cat is all screwed up, right? We can come and help in that situation. So our plan is national, and we work hand in glove with the vet. And like I said, in some instances, we're bringing the pet to the vet for the pet parent.
Yeah. And how do you guys operate with, because again, something like this, I'm thinking, wow, this is great, which means this is probably expensive. So, and it's an, and it is, it's kind of a luxury service, but do you guys work with insurance companies right now, or how does the billing work with your program right now and your structure?
Yeah, that would be up to the pet parent to submit. For example, I have insurance, and I generally submit my bills too and get reimbursed, and we would be no different.
Okay, that makes sense. And when you say
at KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In New York, all of New York, all of New York City.
New York, the 5 boroughs plus Nassau County.
Okay, cool. And right now, when you, so let's walk me through the process. If I had a senior dog, what walk me through the roadmap of me working with Pad. How would I say, hey, I need somebody to come over, and I'm traveling, and my dog walker can't administer X. What's the process to get to you guys?
Sure. So it's actually quite streamlined, actually. We have a really great website that is very user-friendly. We have people answering the phones within seconds or minutes. And so all one needs to do is go on the website, sort of peruse it a bit, and put in an inquiry, and they'll be contacted, within, usually a few minutes. And at that point, we've made sure that we can serve people quickly and efficiently, and we intend to continue that model. And so, we're constantly reworking, how much work do we have? How many people do we need? So we're really staying on top of it. And so we can almost serve, that day or the next day. And so the person will have a conversation with a real person from the company who is, very knowledgeable about animals, and the pet parent will make the request for whatever they need, whether it's someone comes once a day to give Johnny, his amoxicillin because he had a UTI or something. I'm making this up. And so, if it's in Manhattan, sometimes people will leave the key with the doorman or they'll meet first face to face. A lot of people want to meet whomever is going to be treating their pet and coming into their home. And we certainly support that. So, our technicians will come first, meet the pet parent, make sure everyone feels comfortable. And they'll show up on a daily basis to do whatever needs to be done. They will communicate with the pet parent. We have a system called House Call Pro, so the technician can communicate immediately with the pet parent. Things went well. Oh, by the way, he didn't poop today. Just want to let you know, we're very communicative. We want to make sure that people feel comfortable. They don't feel, I don't, even me, and I'm a professional, I'm always like, am I bugging the dog sitter? Like, I hate that feeling of like, can you just send a few more pictures? Just because it'll make me have a better day. Like, can you just make sure that, they pee when they went outside? Because they usually pee twice. Like, I'm trying to treat people the way that I would like to be treated. I hate that barrier, right? I want it to be a partnership. I don't want this, the way medical care has historically been is people have elevated doctors where there's this hierarchy. And, there's good data to show that that model doesn't work. You have to have great communication, to be successful, when treating an animal, a human, whatever. And so our whole premise and model here is let's partner together to take care of your loved one. And so there's my cat. Sorry about that. We really want, we're here to do whatever anyone needs to feel comfortable while they're gone, whether they're at work, whether they're on vacation, whatever it is. And so we have an open line of communication that's a dynamic process, so we can talk and give you the information as little or as often as you need. We can communicate with the veterinarian. I am also, the veterinarian. I'm the chief medical officer, so if there's anything immediately wrong, I'm contacted right away. And so we had a kitten the other day that one of our techs went out to see. The people called and said, she's limping. I don't know if it's really anything. Can you just come see her? So our technician went out there. She saw the kitten and she called me right away, because they actually didn't have a veterinarian. And we do see a lot of people who don't even have a veterinarian. And so I was like, oh, and she's like, can you see the kitten? Well, I'm a cancer specialist, but I love kittens and I love everything. But I was like, bring it in. I'll deal with it. I'll find the orthopedic surgeon. So the kitten came in to see me. I found the orthopedic surgeon that day. We did x-rays right away. It had a fracture through the growth plate, which is very, very serious. It can halt growth. And that kitten was in surgery the next day. So I personally make sure that either the veterinarian on record is contacted, communicated with, and I make sure that the partnership continues over to that relationship. Or if that's not possible for any number of reasons, then I personally make certain that that pet has the appropriate health care. It's not always me because my specialty is not orthopedic surgery, but I make sure an orthopedic surgeon is employed immediately to help that pet.
So there is some sort of diagnosis that you guys can do, because I know Ron was saying earlier that usually the veterinarians are the ones that say, "Hey, here's what we're doing, here's how to do it," and then Pat is kind of a liaison in between. But in that case, it was like, "Hey, I don't have a vet, something's going on with my kitten," and Pat came right over. Is that a special thing, or is that?
No, we're evolving. We're also learning, truthfully. Like, we really want to partner with veterinarians. It's very important to me to, we really started this business for three reasons. The first reason is obvious. It's the pet, right? We want pets to have great health care. We want them to have the best health care that people can get. Not all people have access, sadly, to great healthcare, but the people that do, we want to mimic that and have pets be able to have that healthcare. And in order to do that, there needs to be a liaison. So we did this for the pets. Secondly, we did it for my fellow veterinarians that are extraordinarily stressed. I don't know if you know this, it's sort of a damper on things, but the suicide rate is extremely high for veterinarians. And the reason for that is that we get compassion fatigue. We can't serve everyone in the way that we need and want to. You know, most people who get into this field are deep empaths. And so, you know, it's important for us to give and to make sure we've crossed every T and dotted every I. And there is no way that that is possible. It's just not possible. And so we started PAD so we can help support the veterinarian so they don't feel like, you know, they have to take every call from every pet parent, you know, that day within an hour or 30 minutes. PAD is there to help bridge it. And lastly, which we haven't talked about at all, but I'll throw it in, is the veterinary technician. And I don't know how much you know about this, but the veterinary technician is sort of a dying industry for a multitude of reasons. A lot of it is just what they get paid. And, you know, a veterinarian is nothing without their vet tech, nothing. I could not survive without my brilliant vet techs. And so we really wanted to elevate them and give them independence and celebrate them for the real talents that they are. And the techs that we've hired, you know, I was worried. I mean, we were worried, full disclosure. I'm like, what if they hate it? What if they don't feel like it's like compelling enough? What if they're not, you know, if they're not challenged? And they love it. They really feel like they've created their own space. They have their own clients. They're empowered. And so, you know, that's our way of, we want to be industry changers. And that's one way that's really important to us.
I love that. And I could tell too that you're passionate about it. You're not just reading a script and
I have no script. There's some like grocery list on the wall.
I could tell. I love that. I love that. And that's true. I mean, I do. My cousin she's a specialty vet. She's an exotic vet, and she teaches at NC State. And and so yeah, we have these conversations all the time. And even in the dog training space, it's very similar too. Because exactly to your point, we're a very, very, very empath, right? We love dogs. We love animals. We want to help. We want to help people. But the business side of any industry that people get into because of their empathy and love and compassion and passion for animals or anything can be overwhelming. And that's why, you know, for me over the years, I've had to really kind of butterfly into exactly this, right? I'm not working day to day telling dog owners that there are no bad dogs and that your dog who made a mistake actually doesn't need to be euthanized, because that really weighs on somebody who cares a lot. And so you guys have uniquely innovated a way to kind of take that stress out of that clinical box. And that's really, I think, truthfully, I think that that's pretty special. One thing that comes to mind, guys, that I think a lot of people have a hard time with, and I don't know if you have thought about this or even it's part of your business model, is like I live in upstate New York, so Saratoga area, and
beautiful area.
Yeah, it's great. We love it. It is. It's great. When I tell people I'm from New York, they think I live in Times Square, and I'm like, no, there's black bears and moose, and so the emergent.
Texas, right? The racetrack. I
Yep.
love the horses.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I live right there. Go by it every day. The emergency rooms or the emergency clinics has become a big thing up here because there's not enough of them. They're like, if you have an emergency with your animal right now, there's a good chance you're not going to be able to find a place that's operating, because they operate at very odd hours. Sometimes they'll just not operate because they don't have the staff, or they're further away, and it's becoming a real thing. My mom just had an incident last week with her cat. Her cat was extremely lethargic, eyes glazing back, was outside for a day, not normal, really out of character, and so she ended up finding a place that was open, but now it's becoming such a problem in our area that people can't really find things, right? And so I've always thought, like, man, if you had like an ambulance for dogs, where
Oh my gosh.
you zipped over to somebody's house. Obviously, you wouldn't be able to do the surgeries and all the things. So that's like the limits, right? Where a lot of these dogs who are HBCs or hit by cars or have his bloat or, you know, things like that, you would have limitations to what you can do. But have you guys thought about doing like on-call 24/7 type of support, or is that something that you guys wouldn't venture into because of?
We might get there. Right now, we have a very focused remit on this need in the marketplace, and we also are very careful, quite frankly, not to displace veterinarians and not to be a threat to veterinarians. That said, this can be a rat hole, but the corporate takeover of the veterinary business has in general not been a positive for pets. Nicole's hospital that she's talked about is obviously an outlier to that because it's a teaching hospital, it's a not-for-profit. But because of, some of the profit pressures that veterinarians face in these, big chain hospitals, they get reduced hours, they get closed down if they're not sufficiently profitable, et cetera. And, the old veterinarian working, a business out of passion is unfortunately getting to be more of the exception. And in our instance, it's just Nicole and I, we fund the whole thing. So we don't have any outside pressures. And I'm adamant that I don't want any outside pressures for how we, treat and how we take care of pets. But that's put some pressure on the care. My dog had several issues over the last few years of his life. Here I am, the CEO of the second biggest pet company in the United States, and I had trouble getting in and getting an appointment. Right? It's like, okay, we'll take care of Yogi's knee in 3 months. Well, what do you mean 3 months? And so there's insufficiency of care. There are cases where we can close that gap. There's other cases, we're not surgeons, right? So we're not going to close that gap. But where we can, we want to close that gap. And also, most likely, because we're doing it with a vet tech, do it in a more affordable way so you can get that ongoing care. We had a woman that was taking her pet for diabetes shots every single day to a hospital. I mean, imagine what that bill looks like, let alone the dislocation in her life, where we could come to the house for more cost effectively and take care of that for her. And the pet is going to be more comfortable in their own home. So there's a lot of kind of use cases where that's going to be there.
And
by the way, you talked about exotics. We do exotics, and actually just today, our dispatcher sent the schedule. We are I'm going to get this wrong, Nicole, but trimming a bird's beak at what time is it? At 1 o'clock today, where our lovely Ivana is trimming a bird's beak. Is that right?
That's correct. We're doing that. So one of our techs is an exotic specialist, which is amazing because, as you must know, regarding your sister, that is a very specialized area of medicine, and you really need to know what you're doing. There's not a lot of margin for error when it comes to exotics, and very few people know how to manage these pets. And it is really stressful to bring them to a vet clinic. And the vast majority of veterinarians, and me included, do not know how to manage exotics. And Ivana's home. I always like to FaceTime her. It's like literally birds and lizards everywhere. And I'm like, I can't believe you live like this. But, to each her own. But she's a master. And we're so excited to care, if I had to choose, yes, dogs are my favorite. I grew up with dogs always, but it's hard to choose. Like my cat, he's an emotional support cat for my son. I have a horse. She was, at auction for slaughter. Like, I'm obsessed with her. I love them all. And so it's really, they all hold a different place in our heart, right? Like, just like your children, my kids are, I love them the same, but I love them differently. Mm-hmm. And so, we want to make sure that, every lizard out there gets the care that it needs. I saw a fish with a tumor a couple months ago. Like, If that fish is super important to that person, we're going to do what we need to do.
I love
Like,
that.
no one gets to judge love. Love comes in all shapes and forms. So whatever people want, we'll be there to help. I mean, we obviously, the health, the well-being of the pet is always the most important. We're going to be honest. We're going to tell you if we feel like there's nothing else that can be done. But we will, if we don't have what this pet parent needs, we will find it for them.
I love that. That's truly incredible. Just the other day, my dog found a rabbit nest, I guess is what you call it. And per her prey drive and instinct, she got into all the rabbits, and it was devastating for me. And she's looking at me like, "What?" And everyone else was like, "Dude, it's just rabbits." I was like, "Yeah, but they're cute, and they could have just went off and lived their life, and now they're not because my dog was curious." And I was like, I hated that, but I love that because I believe that too. Like, put the spider on a piece of paper and put it outside. But what do you guys do about, like, a lot of my people who are listening to this podcast, the hundreds of thousands that get into my podcast per year. We have behavioral problems. I started off as working with behavioral dogs, dogs who don't fall under, Rama's talking about shock collars earlier and training protocols and stuff. And there's dogs who don't fall under the regimen and the structure of the normalcy of teaching dogs behaviors. These dogs know the behaviors. They want to kill you. They want to hurt you. They're cool with their people, but you coming into my house, that's a problem. That's an issue. And so using punitive measures and aversive is not only necessary, a lot of times it's the most humane thing to do when you have a dog that innately wants to hurt somebody because somebody beat them when they were a puppy, and now they live with stress and anxiety and trauma, and now a man with a hat that comes in is recognized as that trauma, and now he wants to hurt that person. So now you have a 150-pound Rottweiler that wants to kill the person that's trying to take care of the tumor on you or your broken back or whatever. And then, yeah, you talk about medication, and you talk about all these things, and it's like, what? So that's one thing that I know I'm in my head, and I have a giant Borbul who's really friendly, but he can be scary. Have you guys gone? Have you gone through the behavioral and training protocols for your vet techs that are going into homes with dogs who, or cats, I guess, seem like they're always going to have a problem, but what's that look like?
Yeah, the big scary dogs are always easier than cats, right? The bigger, the easier, always. It took me a long time to get comfortable with cats. Like, I put me in the room with a scary pit bull any day over, a cat. But the cats are special. Once you figure it out, you can be a cat whisperer too. So our techs are fear-free trained, right? We don't send anyone into a situation unless we feel that they're going to be safe and the animal is going to be safe. So there's a lot of communication beforehand. We have a long discussion. Is it better to meet outside? Should we meet outside first so that pet doesn't feel like this tech is invading their area, that they're some sort of perpetrator? So we go through a long list of questions. If there's a situation where, potentially the animal or the vet tech is going to be in danger. So we may, and sometimes it's simply just a brief meeting outside with a little treat. Just here's our first meeting. We'll be back tomorrow to try again. And so certain things need to be dealt with immediately and other things can wait, right? So if it's a nail trimming and a big dog who sort of wigs out at the vet clinic, we have time. That nail trim is not an emergency. So we would have our tech build a relationship slowly, but certainly with that pet. And then we would create a plan that best fit that pet. And, we have two of our technicians are really behavior specialists. And so, often I defer to them, but I make sure that I look at every plan and we make sure that we're going through the process, most importantly, to keep the pet safe.
And so is the fear-free training, I'm not familiar. Is that like a, is that, what is that? What can you define that through the pro? 'Cause that's what, go ahead.
It's loosely, it's really a course where Less is more, right? Like we all know, like when you restrain, with a lot of force, then the animal just fights back. And if they can't fight back, it's even worse. And so it creates this really negative spiral for everyone. For the vet tech, they don't feel good. For the animal, then it's another traumatizing experience. And certainly for the pet parent, like that doesn't do anyone any good. I'm not going to lie. There are certain instances where an animal needs to be muzzled or an animal needs to be tacoed, where they're because it is the only way we can get life-saving treatment done. And at the end of the day, we're here to save lives. But 90% of the time, there are gentle and less is more, sort of methods by which to handle it. And it's not one size fits all either, but it has to do with how you use your voice. It has to do with how you approach an animal. It has to do where you put your hands, right? We all know, those of us in the animal world, like you can't approach an animal from above. You can't approach a horse, from you have to they have to see you. They have to be able to feel like they're in control. So, you go from the bottom up. So there's a whole host of practices that you probably know more about than even I do. And so, we make sure that we take the time that we need. And are we 100% successful? No one's 100% successful, but we put, all of our best efforts forward to build a trusting relationship with that animal. And animals, I believe there are no bad dogs. And I think that if you take the time to do it, you can do it. And it doesn't, again, it doesn't mean you're never going to put a muzzle on a dog. Sometimes that's the safest thing for the dog, right? Sometimes that muzzle actually makes them, they focus on the muzzle and not on what's happening to them. So, we less is more. We try not to do those things. If there's no other choice, we will, but we take our time to build trust.
I love that. Yeah, because even the, from, again, behavioral cases, I typically work with dogs with bite histories, kill histories. They've killed multiple dogs, multiple cats. They have severe bite histories. And, and I even get involved with the legality and the court systems of, dangerous dog or not, especially in New York State. It's a big thing. And so sometimes even the muzzle is, hey man, I don't care if you like me. We're putting this muzzle on because you're going to try to bite me. And if you bite me, it's going to make your case a lot worse. So you're going to fight me. You're going to hate me. You're going to be pissed. You're going to growl. You're going to try to bite me, but at least you're not going to get me. And it's, again, let me help you. So that's a big part of it too, is it's safer for the dog a lot of times. And it's, I always tell people it's life saving for the dog. Like if you don't muzzle the dog or put the dog in a situation where they're going to be successful or correct the dog for trying to kill somebody or bite a kid, like it's better to handle it when it happens. So the dog doesn't make that mistake in the future because it's deadly once that happens. Like,
that's exactly right. And a lot of pet parents actually don't want to acknowledge that their pet has that tendency. It's much better to acknowledge it and deal with it than act like, oh, that's the first time it ever happened, which is what a lot of pet parents do.
Yeah, and that happens often, like in our field. And so, Ron, you probably get a kick out of this. I have a Borbol. I don't know if you're familiar with the breed. It's basically a South African Mastiff. It's a giant, super protective dog, and I got it. I literally got the dog because it was the most difficult dog I've ever worked with, and I wanted to, I guess, spice my life up. And so he's a nice dog, big blockhead, and anyway, he's friendly. He's very suspicious, though. If he doesn't know you, he lets you know that he doesn't know you, but he doesn't have anything behind it. He just stands there, and it's great. So we went to the I have a couple different veterinarians for what you guys were talking about. I call my main vet. We can't get you until next week. I call Petco over at Banfield and I say, hey, we have an opening. And so you go in, Ron, and there's this 6x6 room with with this, a little desk and a little thing to sit on. And now I have this 150-pound gorilla in this room with me. And the vet techs come in and he had some dermatology issues, some allergy issues, some seasonal stuff. And so he had some spots. And so they come in and the vet says, hey, we're just going to scrape him to get a skin sample to check for ringworm. Cause it looked like ringworm. It wasn't, but so the vet tech says, okay, and he's my dog and they don't know this and they don't need to know this. Although I am a professional practicing for 13 years with behavioral cases. And so the vet tech says, I'm going to handle them. So now there's two vet techs in, and then the vet's like, just hold them for me. And I'm sitting back with popcorn, like, okay. So I sit back and it's interesting that they didn't once, and I get it. There's the safety of their vet techs need to keep the vet safe as they do their job. I get that. That makes sense. But not once did they say, do you want to help? Could you help? Would it be better if you helped us? So this funny story of there's these two vet techs holding my dog, and he's looking at him, and he's, if you didn't know dog behavior, not a big deal. I know him. So he's whale eyeing these vet techs. If you didn't know him, you would think this dog is about to seriously hurt these guys. Like, he's sitting there whale eyeing him, his ears are pinned back, and he's looking at him like, what is, and I'm like, I knew him, so I knew he wasn't going to do anything, because I've seen him in situations like this before, but he was terrified, and he's this giant dog. So then he starts bucking, right? So he starts pushing these guys off, I mean, literally pushing and backing up, and he's got tree trunks for legs and thighs, and he's got ham hocks the size of, like, elk. He's huge. And so all this is going on, and I'm sitting there watching, like, I almost filmed it for social media, but I didn't want to get any, it was not malicious, it was just ignorance, right? And I'm sitting there, and they're trying, and he's scraping, and he's just pull everywhere, and it's like a movie. Like, you hear this going on behind a door, you're like, oh my God, what is happening? And I just said, hey guys, I said, can I just try something really quick? So I had my treat pouch with me, and I just grabbed his flat collar, and I gave him a big beef liver, and he's sitting there licking it. And I said, just now you can do your thing. So she goes down to scrape one of the patches off, and he's looking at her, and I go, ah, come on, focus. He's licking, and boom, she did it. And I didn't say anything after, but it was, in my head, I was shocked. I'm like, if this dog was aggressive, or even to a point where you really pushed him into a corner physically and mentally, emotionally even. He was so stressed, and his eyes were like, I'm going to kill you. And they didn't even, like, ask for help or ask the best way to do it. And it just blew my mind that happened, that I was like, thank God he has a good temperament. He's a friendly dog. But I was like, that could have been a disaster. And from a dog owner's standpoint, it would have been their fault, because they didn't ask, does he have a bite history? Is he aggressive? Could you help us? Is this going to be okay? Do you have a muzzle? Like, nothing. And I was just blown away. I was talking to my cousin about it. And she was like, yeah, it's like, it's just, they have to be, a lot of it is like, they don't have time. So they have to get in, and they don't have the time to get to know the dog and do all the things and get the dog comfortable enough to start examining. They just get in, and they're just kind of on this, like,
time. Well, this goes back to the corporate thing, right? There is very, very much an output per hour, number one, and there are inflexible protocols. And I think, if we were going to go get that skin sample, which is part of what we do, is we go get blood samples, we take heart rates. You know, if we were going to go get that skin sample, I mean, Nicole can elaborate, but we would collaborate with you on what's the best way to work with your pet, and we would actually enlist you to help us go do that if our vet techs show up, right?
Yeah, we also have, you know, we carve out time, right? Like, it's really important to us. It seems really inappropriate, insincere, and disingenuous to show up at someone's house for 10 minutes, you know, in and out. I mean, I'm not saying, like, we have cats who we go to their homes every day and give them their meds every day. So no one's spending an hour every day. But, you know, for a new sort of visit, we're there. I mean, we're going into your home. We want to make sure that you feel comfortable, that the pet feels comfortable. And so we create, you know, a dynamic, if you will. And we certainly take the time. And listen, we're new. We want to be successful, right? Like, we don't want you to feel like we don't care, or it was artificial, or, you know, we're the McDonald's of home pet. Like, that is not, It's just Ron and myself. We have no one to answer to. So we take all of this very, very seriously. Listen, when there's a few weeks ago, someone was sick and we were super busy and we had, I went myself. I went myself and I saw a bunch of patients. I kind of liked it actually. I'm like, maybe I'll get a new job here. But then, it just sitting down and chatting with people in their home and the pet, like we talk about your dog. That's exactly the kind of patient we want to serve, one that would feel more comfortable at home. We can't do everything that a veterinarian can do at home, but if the veterinarian says, they sent me a photo, there's some skin lesions, he needs a skin scrape, do me a favor. This dog gets super stressed at the clinic. Go there. The pet parent knows how to manage him. Go there, get the skin scraping, drop it off with me. I'll look at it. I'll prescribe whatever needs to be prescribed. And if the, we'll even bring it, the medication to the home if the person doesn't want to go get it. So, we're just here to, again, bridge the gap.
Yeah, and that's part of, like, again, like the whole no bad dog thing. That's why I created the brand. I trademarked it because I like, if my dog did bite one of these guys, they'd be like, oh, he bit me. You didn't even, you're riding him like a bull. You didn't even ask me for help. You didn't get to know him. You didn't take him out to dinner first. Like, what did you expect to happen here? Like, why wouldn't you say, hey, you think he's going to be okay? I mean, he is the size of a Volkswagen. I mean, you didn't even ask if this, like, nothing. It was so surprising to me. And so one thing I wanted to disclose to you guys, and I know Ron, you're short for time, and I wanted to just talk about this one last thing.
I'm fine.
You're good? Okay. One last thing that we'll continue, but one thing I wanted to ask you guys is, up here in New York, and I don't know if this is globally or internationally, or I'm sorry, domestically here in the States, Mars bought every single vet around us, it seemed. Mars, so for the listeners, Mars the company, like, yes, I think they do chocolate and they own so much. It's a huge, huge, huge corporation. They bought like every single vet company around, like every GP around here, not all of them, but a lot of them. What's the deal with that? And has that, I think, Ron, you mentioned it, like the corporations of, like, time is money, has now impacted the vets, the vet techs, and of course the patients. And so it's kind of like, we get into this because we love animals and we want to help, but then you got the big guy upstairs saying, well, you only got a half an hour with this dog who needs to be euthanized. And it's like, so can you touch on that a little bit? Because I don't think dog owners even have realized the small town GP that you go to is still branded the same and everything, but now a big company has come in, bought the practice, and now has put on new guidelines and even restrictions.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not all bad. And, I will have to caveat, we work with everybody. But there's been a huge consolidation in the veterinary space. So the primary movers in that are Mars and another financial company called JAB. And they're buying networks, and whether that's VCA, whether that's Banfield, there's a host of veterinary networks that have been consolidated, owned by primarily private equity firms. Mm. The good part of that is, let's say there's a rising water in terms of, uniform standards, probably a little more capacity to invest in technology. Like, for example, at Petco, we had handheld ultrasound and things like that. So there are some positives that come out of it. The negatives are, there's more pressure on the vets and the vet techs in terms of throughput, right? And there's two sides to that. One side is, these companies deploy technology that makes it easier to do that. The downside is, the vets spend less time with the pets. The vet techs spend less time with the pets. So there has been a consolidation. 20 years ago, the industry was primarily, single unit operators who just had a passion of being vets. And now the industry is rapidly consolidated. And so in general, it probably has not been in the best interest of pets for this consolidation to have happened. That's why we all need to be advocates for for our own pets and make sure that we're getting the best. And there are those that do it better than others. And some networks have super high standards and some are clearly getting pinched. The other piece that you see is you see, you look at, I'm going to get this slightly wrong, but you look at over the last 5 years, veterinary prices, and they're up almost 100%, right?
Wow.
And so the pricing pressure, because what happened was there were bidding wars for these veterinary hospitals. And quite frankly, bidding wars for veterinarians out of schools, and the pay for veterinarians, which had been too low, escalated rapidly. And the only way to make the financials work to offset those costs and to offset how much these companies paid for the vets was to raise prices and increase throughput. That has not been a net good guy for pet parents.
Yeah, that I was just curious. I that's what I had in mind, is there was probably some pros and some cons, but I just noticed that was a shift in the network of veterinarians locally. Is that something that they did nationally, Ron? Did they?
Absolutely nationally. Absolutely nationally. You have 1,000-unit veterinary networks now. I think you have like four of them that have over 500 units now. And so, I hate to say it, in some ways they're run like a McDonald's, right? Uniformity across, at the end of the day, they're there for profit. That said, the one you cited, and even JEB, I know people there. I know the fundamentals. I, used to buy, Origin dog food when I was at Petco from Mars. These are companies with high values who want to do the right thing for pets. These are not folks that don't have values. These are not folks that don't care for pets. They very much do. But concurrent with that, they have a profit mandate. And so, those things are, they need to balance it every single day.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. It's really tough because you get it. It's you got to keep the lights on. You got to pay the bills. It's the same thing for us in our dog training space. Like, our prices are high, but to keep our staff, who are all younger in their 20s, it's like we have to, like, we the cost of, like, the economy and the cost of living and everything. And it's like, luckily we have a very low turnover rate at our facility in New York. Our manager just hit a decade. Some of our other trainers have been with us 6 years, 7 years, 5 years, etc. And we have to keep raising all of our prices, and it sucks because then we're compared to like a box, right? And obviously, no offense, but it's like a Petco or a PetSmart, where they're offering the basic package, for what, I don't even, a couple $100 for a 6 week thing. And it's like it's like they're two different things, and it's hard to keep that. I think Nicole said, like, the passion fatigue and all that starts to happen, and it's hard, right, to balance out this love and compassion and empathy for dogs mixed with businesses, right? And that's where veterinarians kind of, they go to school to be a vet and do the surgeries and understand blood panels and understand all this stuff. And I talk to a lot of veterinarians who we discuss and we emphasize on the lack of education on behavior. Where most veterinarian camps, they go through schooling and even go into their expertise, right, in the exotics and stuff, and they do very little to almost no behavioral stuff. And that's something that I've had conversations with bigger organizations like VCA and even Amazon, for their drivers. We talked about contracts and relationships because there just isn't this base level, to Nicole's point of, like, when you go in and you have a Malinois on the corner looking at you like, I don't know what to do with this. And they're getting on the floor and they're trying to touch the dog immediately or whatever. They just don't have a base of what to do. And even in something I've been passionate about is the veterinarian clinics aren't really set up super successful either. And you guys can maybe touch base on this with the waiting rooms. Petco and PetSmart have an advantage. Does Petco have a veterinarian hospital?
240, that's what I was talking about.
What's that called in there?
Vetco.
Vetco. Okay, thanks. I didn't know the name of it. So Vetco and Banfield, and these, they have the advantage because you can walk around the store. But when you go into like a traditional vet office, it's like usually this little box that everybody just sits there and looks at each other, and it's like, you know, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, your training example or a veterinary example, the, Petco's, the PetSmarts, they benefit because if, somebody comes in to, I live in San Diego, if someone comes into Del Mar and gets a training session, and they're there 10 times, guess what? They're probably going to spend a couple hundred bucks on toys, treats, et cetera. So there's a benefit to the box that doesn't happen with No Bad Dogs because you don't have that broad assortment of the other products. So you need to make the business work for the training alone. And so it's a very different model. And same thing on the veterinary side of the house. If someone comes in, now the difference in PetSmart is PetSmart did not own Banfield. So Banfield did not benefit from the sales within the box. Petco, in Petco's instance, it does.
Yeah, and also not for nothing, when the dog comes in for training and like especially for puppies and younger dogs who are learning all these fun things and we're using 100% positive reinforcement and all the fun stuff, you could bring them to the vet and they're like, "Oh, this is great. I love this spot. This is where I get all the treats." And so it kind of the hand washes the other. Nicole, I wanted to ask you something. Being somebody who specializes in cancers, do you have any information and insight on the biggest reasons why? Because I've talked to a bunch of different people in the industry, but not specialists in oncology and cancers. Can you pinpoint particular reasons why dogs are getting cancer? And is it because I've heard it's been related to food, it's been related to genetics, it's been related to environments. Like, can you touch base on that? What are you seeing? And is there anything that dog owners can do to potentially prevent their dog from getting cancer?
So I wish I could answer that question. But we know it's a combination of genetics, of environmental factors, and aging, right? That is generally what, when we talk about what causes cancer, it's a combination of all three. There are some very small exceptions to that rule, childhood cancers, right? God forbid, pediatric cancers. I just wrote a book chapter with my brilliant resident, Margaret Wong. I want to give her the credit. We just wrote a book chapter on pediatric cancer in dogs. Thank goodness it's rare, but it exists. When we see pediatric cancers, those are generally all, it's inherited. It happens right away, and it doesn't have this sort of conglomerate of a constellation of things that lead to this disease. But for the most part, it's again, it's a constellation of factors. There are breeds that are overrepresented. We know that. We know that golden retrievers get lymphoma. We know that boxers get a whole host of cancers, all the time. We know that, West Highland White Terriers, get some sort of lung cancers. We know that Scotties get bladder tumors. So there are breeds that get it. Bernese Mountain Dogs, bless them. They are the most beautiful things. I mean, I love big dogs too. I mean, is there anything more beautiful than a big, huge, lovely Berner? And they get terrible histiocytic sarcoma. Many of those dogs don't even make it to 6 years of age. And so a lot of it is, you have to, we need better breeding practices out there. We need breeders to be responsible. And, I'm not here to, I'm a big believer. I love rescue dogs. I love purebred dogs. I love dogs, and I don't judge anyone for what they have. Dogs are on this earth for a lot of different reasons. And if, a golden retriever is making an elderly gentleman who lives alone, happy and less lonely, he should have his golden retriever. I'm not judging him for not having a rescue dog. But that is a problem, is there are breeds that are overrepresented, and breeders are continuing to breed these dogs that clearly have this genetic predisposition to developing these cancers. Then there's the environmental factors, which we can't do a whole whole lot about, right? Herbicides, pesticides, things like that. You know, there's not a whole lot we can do about that. We know that cats that live with smokers, they will lick their fur, and the smoke, the tobacco residue is on their fur, and then they develop oral tumors, devastating oral squamous cell carcinomas from having lived with a smoker. I mean, can you imagine, like, finding out that you are the perpetrator of your cat's, you know, devastating oral cancer? Like, can you think of anything worse? And then aging, all of us, as we age, our DNA repair mechanisms, they get lazy. So every day in our bodies, dogs, cats, horses, people, we have mutations that go on, except we have these repair mechanisms, things like P53, or that come in and fix those mutations. But as we get older, those repair mechanisms get lazy and they don't work as well. So all older beings are at higher risk for cancer. Now, can we do anything about this? And, you know, it's not a simple or easy answer to that question, and there's not a lot of answers to it. One is, preventative care is always the best care, right? Like, prevention is always best. And so pets need to see their veterinarian on a regular basis. So they certainly need to see their veterinarian once a year. There's no question about that. And they need to see their veterinarian if something is wrong. And if something is wrong and they see the veterinarian and it doesn't get better, they need to go back. And if they don't feel like they're getting the answer that they need to go someplace else. So we don't take no for an answer in this world, right? If something is wrong, we need to investigate. And that goes for us too. So that's the biggest thing. There are some new tests out there that, you know, there's a, and I know very little about it, and the company has revealed very little about it, but there's a new screening test for lymphoma out there. So, you know, whether or not that's going to hold its own and prove to be pivotal and a game changer, we'll see. And then, you know, I have some personal, you know, sort of thoughts on it as a cancer specialist. And I feel, you know, after age 6 or so, you know, animals should certainly get blood work every year, complete blood count, a chemistry profile, looking at, you know, organ function, a urinalysis, and then imaging, just like I would have a mammogram, or, you know, someone over the age of 50 would have a colonoscopy. You know, x-rays of the chest and an ultrasound of the abdomen. They're nice screening tools just to find something before it's a problem. I don't, you know, I'm privileged, and I want to be very sensitive to the financial constraints here, and understand that not everyone has the luxury of doing these tests, but they are out there and they are less expensive than dealing with the crisis when it occurs. So that's something to think about.
And so for your annuals for your pets, you would suggest doing some sort of blood analysis to check for any type
For
of.
certain. And I think that's even, I think the AVMA recommends that. I don't quote me on that, but, you know, there should be blood work done on a yearly basis for certain. After about, it depends that, you know, older dogs age sooner than younger dogs. So older dogs by age 6, and bigger dogs by age 6, were already entering sort of, you know, the geriatric phase. And then it depends where you live. We know that tick-borne disease is everywhere. And tick-borne disease, and I'm not an infectious disease specialist by any stretch, but we know that tick-borne disease is not only is it also a problem for people and for people who live with dogs that carry ticks, it can be devastating. And so it's really important to be vigilant when it comes to flea and tick prevention and testing for those diseases on a regular basis.
And do you, I mean, upstate is I think it's like 1 in 5 ticks carries Lyme or something like that, something crazy.
And how about that? And I don't know if you've heard anything about this, but I find it so fascinating and grateful that I don't eat meat. But there's, have you heard about the tick that you can be bitten by and then you develop this meat allergy? So the whole East End of Long Island, like, they did some sort of meta-analysis, and they're just like, why are we, you know, selling less beef out here? Why are people in restaurants ordering less burgers or less steak? And it's because it's really prominent, this tick out there. And the vast majority of people that live out there have been bitten by this tick, and now they have this meat allergy and they can't eat meat. It's a really strange phenomenon. Yeah.
Only in New York Hamptons.
It's other places
Yeah.
too. But yeah, I don't eat meat, so I'm not worried about it.
Do you find, have you found any information about the dog's diet having anything to do with cancers?
Yeah, so Ron is definitely, he has he's the food guy. He's the expert here. I'll just say from a practical standpoint, the food industry is the pet food industry is wild, right? Like it is really everyone has dipped their toes into it. And I'm just gonna put my doctor hat on and not subscribe to any dog food or anything like that. But it's really important to feed your pet a balanced diet and a diet that is high in quality control. So when you find sort of Dr. Joe's, diet with some Instagram influencer telling you how great their Chihuahua is doing on it, I would shy away from that, right? Because we know there's been some devastating, eras in the pet food industry where there's been tainted dog food from China, tainted treats, animals have gone into kidney failure. So quality control is the biggest thing. And so that's what I look for. The larger the company, the better the quality control. I mean, that's all I can say. Be careful. Stay away from gimmicks. Stay away from really small, companies that haven't established themselves. Ask questions. There's always numbers on there. What does your quality control look like? And everyone always calls me a fat shamer when I'm in the clinic. Like there doesn't need to be any fat dogs, right? Like we have full control of what our dogs eat. And it's an epidemic in this country, human obesity and dog obesity. And it's absolutely absurd. Like we can control how much they eat. And so it's real. That's why you need to go to the vet every year. Also, it's astonishing how people don't know what's too much. They don't even, I see people and I'm like, so your dog is obese. And they're like, oh, you think so? And I was like, yeah. And then when they tell me what they eat, I saw a dog the other day that gets their regular food plus chicken plus a popsicle in the afternoon because it's hot out, plus Nilla wafers before bed. I was like, and he's a golden retriever. It's not like he's some like sensitive little collie that doesn't like his food. It's a golden retriever. He'd eat the house if you let him. And I was like, okay, like we need to get control over this like atrocity here. And I put the dog on, 2 cups of food a day. Love the dog. We don't love with food. We love with attention and exercise. And so again, so to simplify, quality control. No gimmicks. They need their dog food. Like, if you really are intent upon feeding a home cooked diet, you need to connect with a nutritionist that will create. I don't recommend it because I think it's a lot of work and I don't think you're going to do any better. But if there are people who really subscribe to that, and if that's what they want, there are companies, I'm not going to represent any of them, that do sort of this home cooked diet, if you will, but they are balanced diets. Or and if the pet parent wants to do it, they need to connect with a nutritionist. And there are companies out there to do it. And it's very complicated. And then amount is the biggest deal. The dog food labels always tell you to feed more than the pet really needs. They want to sell dog food. And so it's always too much. It's always too much. Big dogs over, dogs up, 60 to 90 pounds rarely need more than 2 cups a day. And it doesn't seem like a lot to people. So, people, they feed themselves with food for love, for self-love, and they do it with their animals. So, less is more. Skinny dogs live longer.
Yeah, it's the same thing with people. It's like the anthropomorphism thing where dog owners are like vanilla wafers because they look cute. And I'm like, you're killing your dog. Or, a dog that tries to bite somebody and they just go, psh. And I'm like, your dog's going to die because you're not giving your dog enough structure and balance here. So, cool.
I would just add, I've walked probably 10 different pet food facilities in my old life. And you see such a broad horizon. Before I worked at Petco, I'm embarrassed to say, I was feeding a dog a food that was not the best in terms of protein content, sourcing, et cetera. I came to Petco and I learned from their advisors what is good. And what I look for personally is protein content. It's part of the reason I work at Bill, or I'm chairman of Bill Jack, is 9 pounds of chicken in a 10-pound bag, number one. Number two, I think Nicole and I both believe that this meat-only diet is not in the best interest of pets. A balanced diet is right. We both believe that raw is probably not the right approach for a variety of reasons. And so I like foods that are backward integrated into the provisioner. So if I walk the Origin plant, right, which is owned by Mars, and they know that the fishermen, they know the folks who are raising the cattle, they know the farmers, and that kitchen is a human grade kitchen. And so people who go to that extent are Honest Kitchen, the same thing, human grade ingredients. But you look at some of the, I've seen too many plants with slurry in it, which is just random kind of meat that's put into dog food. I've seen too much kind of kibble. The cooking process of kibble is highly efficient from a profit standpoint, but it's not the best thing in terms of retention of nutrients. So I think people need to do their research and talk to their vets. I think the vets are the best source. And the vets tend to go to brands like, the Hills, like the Can Royal Canins, the Canidae's, and things like Bill Jack historically has been recommended as well, human grade recommended as well. But the vet's the best source for that information.
It's always great when these dog food companies employ veterinarians too, right? Like that always makes us feel better. And I guess the only, last thing I would say is, we don't need to supplement. If you're feeding a fortified diet, we don't there are no supplements unless there's a health need and you've gotten, medical advice on that. Again, like, the world is supplement crazy. And, there's just something I was reading in the New York Times about how people have gone like turmeric crazy and now they're developing liver failure because they've overdosed on turmeric or I think that's what it said. So, and then just quickly, again, I just want to echo what Ron said is raw diets. Like, there is good data to support that that is the wrong thing to do. I know there are people who strongly dispute that. And all I would say is, you wouldn't feed raw chicken to your children, and you shouldn't feed raw chicken to your pets. And not only is it harmful to them, it's harmful to the people who live with them because, and they shed things like E. coli and Salmonella and very, very dangerous infectious diseases.
Yeah, I've done my research on. I've had a couple different nutritionists on. I've had a couple different vets on, and we've talked about because some vets love raw diets, some vets don't like raw diets. I've done the research. A couple of my dogs are on raw now. A couple of my dogs before were on. Lola was on kibble for a while, and just trying to balancing out, and then finding. It's the same thing like you said. Like there's so much going. It's polarizing for dog owners because it's like everyone's all in over here. Everyone's all in. And I just tell people, do what works for you. Do your research. Like the companies that I've worked with before, like We Feed Raw, for an example, they do an HPP process because they have to go through the FDA because they nationally ship. They're a big company, and so they do an HPP, which essentially takes all of the it's cold pressing and neutralizing all the bacteria. And so I have kids, I have young kids, and I've fed raw since they were born. And so those are things that I'm mindful of. That, and I tell people, to your point, do your research, do what works. So for me,
Dogs, I mean, in defense of what you're saying, I have heard dozens of stories of animals with terrible skin disease and GI issues, and they don't respond to anything but a raw diet. That's true. And I see that. I just, I come from the doctor
I
point and
know.
I want to protect the family. I'm a mom. And so, it just scares me, but there
100%.
are dozens of stories where you're right. And so, you balance it all, right? If you have this dog that's suffering terribly and the only thing that works is a raw diet, then you it's a risk analysis.
Yeah, that's what happened actually, is the Saint Bernard, my Saint Bernard that I was living with had terrible hot spots. Terrible hot spots. Like,
Usually it's a good thing.
yeah, licking raw, huge infections, scabs all the time. And she went to a vet and she said, try a raw diet. She tried a raw diet, and within a month they were gone and they never came back. And then that's when I was like, Whoa. Okay. So anyway, so one thing I want to ask Ron before we check out here is, Ron, do you have any advice for dog, like, because you've done so much in marketing and you've scaled these gigantic businesses and you have such a background in business. Do you have it? What advice would you give small business owners, dog trainers, or anybody alike? And I know that you've been very niche down from Pepsi to Petco to now Pad. What advice? And it could be one sentence to a paragraph. What advice would you give business owners to help scale their business and become more successful with all the efficiencies that you've seen in these big companies?
I think there's one rule, and then there's secondary. The one rule is take care of your customers. You can't have a successful business if your customers don't love what you're doing. The first rule I went into Petco was it's about the pets first, right? If you are in the pet industry, make sure you're doing the right thing for the pet first, and the pet parent. And to your point, earlier, 90%, 95% of pet parents want to do the right thing for pets, and only 50% of them know what that looks like. So there's a huge opportunity for all of us in the industry to help educate them. But that's number one. And then second, for a successful business side of the house, make sure you're scaling your cost slower than your revenue. So number one, take care of your customers, and number two, make sure you're scaling your cost structure more slowly than your revenue. It's something called leverage in your financial model, and you want to make sure that's happening. Otherwise, if your costs are growing faster than your revenue, unless you're in a heavy investment standpoint, you're not going to have a sustainable business.
Love that. Thank you. All right, guys. Thank you so much for hopping on here. This has been incredibly insightful and also super relatable. I mean, from what we've talked about with Pad, I've gone through all of these things with very bad experiences with having to make really last minute life altering, potentially traumatic experiences to then having really nice in-home services. And so before we clock out, do you guys want to give any information of how people can find Pad, especially in the New York and Long Island area, websites, social media?
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and go ahead, Nicole. I want to introduce one person.
It's padhomepetservices.com. So that's the easiest way to do it. We can call you, we can talk to you. There's Yogi.
Yogi wants to say hi. He's a chocolate lab, happens to be a rescue pure breed. Nicole, you talked earlier as if they were separate, but he
No,
was
that's true. There's sometimes they're both.
he's from a puppy mill. So whoops.
So Pad Home Pet Services, we're there. We're waiting for you. And sometimes it's just a question, and we're happy to do that too. And you know where to find us if you have any questions. We're here to help you. And I'm just going to leave this by telling you a little secret. I have a Sharpei, so I always need help in that arena because we all know about Sharpeis, and so he's still a work in progress at age six.
Yeah, Sharpeis are fun. Those are cool
Yeah,
dogs.
they're fun, funny, and sometimes not that funny, and sometimes they need some correcting, which isn't really my specialty.
Yeah.
I'm going to
Yeah,
stick to
well,
that.
you guys have my contact if you ever need anything. I really appreciate you guys hopping on. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. This has
Okay,
been
take
great.
care. For all you do. Thank
Thank
you
you,
for all
guys.
you do.
So important.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
Right, take care. Thank you.
Bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary, while supplies last. Tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.